Today, on The Exam Room.
To put this into perspective, food waste actually contributes more emissions than the entire airline industry. So it's a really big problem for our planet. But not only that, grocery prices have just skyrocketed in recent years. And if we're throwing out up to 30% of our food as individuals, we're really missing the opportunity to cut down some of that inflation on our grocery bills.
The number one wasted food is, in fact, stale bread. And you've come up with a bunch of different recipes for that.
So what I love to do with it, first of all, you can make breadcrumbs. The other thing I love to do, which I have in our breakfast chapter, is called a last week's loaf breakfast casserole, and it's really a spin on a French toast. It rehydrates the bread into this beautiful breakfast recipe that has found new life.
Welcome to the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. Hi, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll, raising health IQs coast to coast and around the world. Want to say hi to the exam roomies listening in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Anchorage, Alaska, and Durban, South Africa. Wherever you are, we appreciate you helping to make the world a healthier place. This is episode 32 of season 7, number 531 overall. And today is all about getting scrappy, roomies. We are getting scrappy with Carly Bodrug and her new cookbook, Scrappy Cooking, a cookbook that is filled with recipes that are good for your health, the health of the planet, and will keep some extra change in your pocket. And a lot of it at that, because scrappy cooking is all about getting everything you can possibly get out of your food. It is when the scraps become the main event. And Carly is here with us today to show us how. Already, she is a New York Times bestselling author, and I have no doubt that scrappy cooking will get her on that mantle for a second time. And so today is all about raising our health and kitchen IQs, and we're going to be getting into just how much money her scrappy method can save, and the insane amount of food that the average person wastes every year, the net effect that has on the environment, and how turning that trash can be a treasure for reducing your carbon footprint. And the food, my goodness, the food. Carly is going to tell us how to turn everything from mushy berries to wilted greens and even coffee grounds into delicious, healthy magic. No leftover will be left behind. It is an amazing conversation filled with creativity with the queen of scrappy cooking, our dear friend, Carly Bodrug. Great to see you, Carly. Congrats on the new book.
Thank you so much, Chuck. I am so thrilled to be here. And I am such a fan. I'm such a fan of the exam room. And most of all, I'm such a fan of you. So thanks for having me.
You flatter me. You start every interview like that. But God bless. I will take the kudos nonetheless. How is it going? I have seen you everywhere recently. So many podcasts, so many blogs. Even saw you on Sherry Shepherd. How's your head?
We're hanging in there, you know. It's been a crazy month, and I just got to say the plant-based community is the best. I didn't know how this book launch was going to go, and they have just embraced me with open arms, and thanks to lovely people like you. So yeah, it's going. The books are, I'm so excited to see the books in people's hands, because these recipes, I just think they're awesome, and I really think people are going to have a lot of fun with them. So that's what I'm most looking forward to in this moment.
Yeah, 140 plus recipes. How long did it take for you to put this thing together?
It was probably around a year of recipe testing. And I was really lucky because I was able to hire my sister full time to help me this time. So my first one, I was 100% solo. But having her really allowed me to have more attention to detail with the recipes, do a more thorough testing process. And then one step further, we even had a recipe tester this time around. So she provided excellent feedback for the recipes. And I just think it created a better product all around. But yeah, cookbooks are a behemoth. As you know, from book being behind the scenes of the book writing process, usually from pitching to it actually coming out, books can take up to 2 to 3 years. So it's a really long and beautiful, sometimes really hard process to get a book off the ground.
The idea of hiring a recipe taster is interesting to me. I would imagine in order for this to work well, it has to be somebody who is completely independent. Can't be a friend or a family member. It has to be just a, you know, Joe or Jane from the recipe tester pool, which is completely independent. Who was your recipe tester? Were they independent?
Absolutely. So her name is Trish Sabin. Could be not pronouncing her last name there, but she actually tested for Healthy Girl Kitchen's cookbook as well. I'm not sure if you're aware of her, but she's an incredible plant-based blogger, and she recommended her to me. And completely third party, she lives in New York. She's huge into plant-based food, but she gave me like very ruthless, great feedback on the recipes. And it's great to have somebody go through it line by line and be like, wait, you said that this recipe takes 20 minutes. It took me 30. So to have that feedback where somebody's like, this is somebody's full-time job. They test recipes for a living, is just invaluable for the finished product. And I don't think now that I've gone through that process with a recipe tester, I would want to put out a cookbook without it, because it's just that reassurance that the recipes you're putting out that people are going to be making are tested and good.
I would love to audition for that job. I wonder how one even becomes a professional recipe tester, like, and what the qualifications are. Can you go to school and get a degree in recipe testing? I don't know.
I believe she has some formal training in cooking, so perhaps a chef. So I think it takes some time, right? You have to be able to provide feedback and have, everybody thinks I have like great attention to detail, I think from the outside, but I've surrounded myself with people who have great attention to detail because it is not my strong suit whatsoever. But I would say if you're going to become a recipe tester, or if you are a recipe tester, that needs to be number one, because she was catching like little things that I would never notice. And that's really what you need when you're putting a cookbook, because when you're putting a cookbook in the world, it's not like you can go back on your blog and edit the recipes. Like once the recipes are printed, that's it. You can't go back and change it. So you just really need to have like that editing and recipe testing process nailed down.
But I'm a sensitive soul, and I love the fact that you're so open to criticism and feedback, but you said that her feedback could be like ruthless. What was like the most scrutinizing, just, I don't want to use the word soul crushing, but like, was there a piece of feedback that you got during this process? You were like, oh my God, I'm not good at this. What am I doing?
No, she was so nice, but there was definitely like some recipes that she made and she's like, something is not right. So one of them that comes to mind is, and I made it yesterday on Instagram, it's my Sunday sauce recipe, and it's this beautiful homemade kind of bolognese sauce where you grind up vegetables and then add a can of tomatoes. Well, I had the measurement for the can of tomatoes like wrong. So I had put it that it's half the size than what it actually should be. So when she made it, she's like, something is not right with the ratio of the tomatoes. And that was just as simple. Like, it's so easy to make mistakes in recipe testing. That was just simply me probably Googling like average size of a can of tomatoes, thinking that I used like a smaller can than I actually did. This is really giving people the foresight of like what it actually takes to write a cookbook, because you almost need to be mathematical in a sense when you're making exact measurements and then telling people to do them, which is not necessarily my strong suit. But again, thank goodness I have like now a team surrounding me that can help me make sure I'm dotting my I's.
Yeah, you know, I'm not one for measuring and all of that when I'm cooking. I'm an eyeball kind of a guy. So I would see very much how that could be almost a struggle when you're doing your cookbook, man. But if somebody came back to me with feedback for a recipe and I thought that I had done a really good job with it, and they're like, something's missing, there's this little vindictive side of me that would come out and be like, well, something's missing from your face. Okay. Like, first of all, no. Second of all, how dare you? And third of all, get out of my life. But then, you know, you have to be open to the feedback, because as I always like to point out to my wife, there are 8 billion some odd people in this world, and we all think and taste and feel things differently. So it's all kind of subjective, and I'm sure she's doing her best just to like sculpt this so that it appeals to the widest palate possible.
And you know what, Chuck, after being on Instagram for 6-7 years and posting all sorts of videos that have made it to the wrong side of the world at some points, my skin has gotten very thick. So the recipe tester that I hired telling me something was off, I was like, there were so many emails I sent back when she was providing feedback where it was like, thank God I hired you, because the recipes were just so much better for it. And I know a lot of people have different processes for this. There's tons of cookbook authors who will hire like fans of theirs and have like 20 recipe testers. But to hire somebody who had experience doing this, it was just, I felt so grateful to be able to do that. And it was because of the success of my first book that I was able to kind of build a team to make it happen in that way.
Well, let's talk about this book. This book is definitely different from your first cookbook, at least in concept, because the deliciousness like matches it on par, if not exceeds it even. Like there are some gem diggity gems in here, Carly, that are so good. Yeah, a gem diggity gem. That's how you know it's a gem mint 10 of a recipe. It's so good. But let's start with the idea of scrappy cooking. We've talked a little bit about this on the show, but for those exam roomies who aren't yet familiar with what the concept of scrappy cooking is, what exactly is scrappy cooking?
Yeah, so I heard the statistic a few years back that really shocked me, and that was that 30 to 40% of all food in the US ends up in landfills. And when you hear this, your mind sort of goes to, okay, does it decompose? Why is that a problem? And actually, the problem is that as it decomposes in landfills, it emits a really powerful greenhouse gas called methane. And to put this into perspective, food waste actually contributes more emissions than the entire airline industry. So it's a really big problem for our planet. But not only that, grocery prices have just skyrocketed in recent years. And if we're throwing out up to 30% of our food as individuals, we're really missing the opportunity to cut down some of that inflation on our grocery bills. So I felt really inclined to start talking about this because it seemed to be this thing that nobody was discussing. And I remember I just threw up an orange peel candy recipe one day and didn't think much of it. Called it scrappy cooking. Don't know why or how I came up with the name there, and walked away from my phone. And I came back an hour or two later, and it had been viewed over 1 million times, and people were just going crazy over this subject. So scrappy cooking is really this idea about cooking in a way that reduces your food waste. And I think I've heard some feedback from people as they've seen the recipes I've been filming and posting on Instagram from the book, that were like, you've sold me now. But at first, I really didn't know if the idea of low-waste cooking was for me. But really, how I created the recipes in the book were from this concept of kind of cleaning out your fridge. So the recipes are really whole food, plant-based. If you have my first book, they're oil-free, adaptable, nut-free, gluten-free, adaptable. And they're really customizable to the veggies and pantry items you have. So for a lot of recipes, you can interchange the beans. For a lot of recipes, you can interchange the grains used, interchange the vegetables, so that you're not having to go out and buy a whole bunch of ingredients that you don't already have, which is one of the keys to reducing waste. It's never bringing the food into your home in the first place.
All right. Well, I'm crunching some numbers as you're talking there. So you say the average person wastes about 30% of their groceries. That is a high number. And I think that this number is low. This was released statistics coming from 2022. Somebody, average household in the U.S. spends about $5,703 a year on groceries. And if you figure you're throwing 30% of that out the window, that's a lot of money for the typical family, Carly. That is a lot of money.
Yeah, I think it was something like over $1,500 the average family wastes in food per year, which is a lot of money. Like you could be slashing hundreds of dollars off your grocery bill if you were just more mindful about your food. And I mean, I don't want to play a blame game here because I still waste food. Like it is difficult to completely be zero waste when it comes to your kitchen. But the biggest thing I tell people is you don't have to become like some crazy scrappy chef where you're using your orange peels and banana peels, which is also fun. And I also have recipes for those in my book. But the big thing I tell people is the low-hanging fruit is not to bring the food into your home in the first place. And the number one way to do that is by meal planning and being way more intentional about what you're buying. So I tell everybody, sit down for an hour on Sunday or whatever day you do your grocery shopping and think about what you're going to eat for the week. So what are you going to have for breakfast, lunch, dinner? Are you going to bring your dinner for lunch the next day as leftovers? Leave some spontaneity in there if you're someone who likes to go out to eat. And then create a grocery list based on what you're planning to eat for the week. And then before you even head to the grocery store, shop your fridge and pantry. Look through your shelves, see what you have. I don't know how many bags of oats, Bob's Red Mill oats, we have gone to the grocery store and bought before we kind of put this system in place, because inevitably you end up at the grocery store, you haven't looked in your fridge and pantry, and you're overbuying. And then that creates waste because the food spoils before you can get to it. So the biggest thing I can tell people, and this really falls into healthy eating as well, because if you're someone who's going to be more prepared and actually eat the food that your well-intentioned self bought, you're going to be eating way healthier. You're not going to be rushing through the drive-through, making something from your freezer. You're going to be cooking whole healthy foods, which is what this is all about, the missing piece here.
With meal planning, I think a lot of people, though, especially when they go on these diet plans, this is what used to throw me all the time, is that every meal was different. There wasn't a lot of leftovers on these meal plans. And it was like, but wait a minute, do you know how much that's going to cost me in groceries? So when you're meal planning, how much do you account for making sure that there is an adequate amount of leftovers so you're not having to make three meals every single day?
Yeah, for me, I am somebody who, before I was a food blogger full-time, I was perfectly fine with eating the same lunch 3 days in a row or eating the same dinner a couple of nights a week. And I think once you kind of get that through your mind, you're going to save a lot more money and you're going to be eating healthier because, again, you're not kind of rushing through the drive-thru or ordering a pizza at the end of the night. And so the big thing here is to be making extra. So a lot of the recipes in my new book can lend four to six servings. So depending on whether you're in a family or you're not, you could double the recipes, or you could just make the four servings so it can lend you for four meals. And that's really the key to meal prepping. And one of the things I made sure to include in my book as well is the storage instructions. So most of the recipes will last you 3 to 4 days. And there's some recipes that lend really well to this. So anything that is like curry based or stew, it'll almost taste better after sitting in the fridge overnight. And that's really what we want. And the other thing to consider if you are somebody who likes variety, which I totally get it, think about meals that can have overlapping ingredients. So one thing that I use often in my book, I try to think about, okay, what do I typically buy every week? What do I use in recipes? And one thing I really love to use in place of coconut milk or cashew cream is like a sunflower cream sauce. Sunflower seeds are really affordable. They're great for you. You can blend them up with a little water, lemon, maybe a little bit of nutritional yeast to make a cream. And that can be used as like just a salad dressing, a sauce over sweet potato and kale, or even in a soup to thicken or make it creamy. So if you can think about ways in which you can use overlapping ingredients, that's another key to cutting down on that grocery bill and then also using the entire thing when you buy it.
There you go. Do you remember ever going to the store and just being gobsmacked by the grocery bill? What's the biggest sticker shock you can remember?
Oh man, I always say Costco, you can never go in there without spending $300. Like I will go into Costco and I'm like, okay, we have really great organic berries and greens in Costco. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to get like some berries. And then it's the marketing, right? Your eyes are going everywhere. You're like, oh my goodness, they have a new vegan product. That air fryer is on sale. And look, now their clothes are looking pretty cool. So Costco is the worst in that way, but you are buying bulk. So in a way it can help reduce your grocery bill. But there are some weeks, especially before I started being more mindful about waste as a cookbook author, where I could spend $300 and as you're checking out of the grocery store, it's just bonkers, especially in Canada. Canada groceries are crazy. How about you?
Oh man, it's silly. You know, my wife and I, we rely way too heavily on Instacart. I guess maybe because we live kind of out in the country and it's just, I don't really feel like driving all the way out to the good grocery store right now.
I love Instacart.
Huge, huge fan of it. But, you know, what we didn't realize at first is that, one, you pay a little bit more in a lot of stores. So the prices are higher in the app than they would be had you actually gone to the store. On top of that, of course, you got to make sure that you're taking care of your delivery person. There's a service charge on top of that, taxes, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, you think you're only getting six or eight things, but like sometimes like that's what, a $35 minimum, but then easily that can become a $100 bill. And it's like, how in the world for like eight things are we paying $100? It's the price of convenience. It's the service charges, blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of the trap that we fall into. And I have priced that where I will instead drive to a Food Lion and load up on things. And it's like a good $40 cheaper if I'm buying for the entire week. And it's like, hey, you know, we really could, if over the course of 52 weeks, you multiply that by 40, you're talking about like over $2,000. And it's like, yeah, that's a pretty big savings. But damn, I still just don't feel like going, Carly. I just don't feel like going.
And you know what I find with Instacart is you can eliminate that you're looking around the grocery store and you're being bombarded by brilliant marketing. I think when you're sitting at home and you're making a grocery list on Instacart, you do have kind of more impulse control, which is a key. I found when I started shopping on Instacart, even though you do have like the tip and the service charge and whatever else, in some sense, it reduced my grocery bill because I was just more mindful and wasn't picking up a bunch of items that I didn't need, right? Mm. So if it's something that's accessible for you and really going to like improve your life, it could be worth it.
Well played. What we ultimately wound up doing was getting the Instacart credit card. So we automatically get 5% cash back. So that helps us as well. And then, you know, we look for the stores that do have the in-store pricing. Some of them do, so you don't get that upcharge that we were just talking about. And then you can wind up doing okay. And you're right, the impulse control is definitely on point. But let me ask you this. I mean, you shop for produce as much as anybody I've ever met in my entire life. I find that a lot of times the shoppers will buy something that isn't quite to my standard in terms of produce. Maybe it's a little too ripe. Maybe it's not ripe enough. I like to get it when it's just right. How do you coach up your delivery or your shopper to make sure that you're getting the right type of produce?
Yeah, this is a real thing.
It is. Because
especially as a food blogger, I sometimes need the produce to look like a certain way for a video. So I will message them and say, oh, can you get like a really big broccoli florette? And 9 times out of 10, they're wonderful. And then I will add an extra tip. So that's been my solution. The other thing I try to do is ask them to not use the little plastic grocery bags, because when I first ordered on Instacart, everything came in the little plastic grocery bags, like the produce bags. And I mean, they're just so unnecessary, because if you think about it, the food is coming on trucks, it's being handled by grocery store workers, etc. You're going to wash it likely when you get home. So there's no need for it to be put in these little plastic bags and then arrive at your house. But that is some of the barriers with a delivery service like Instacart, because I think they're automatically putting the stuff in the plastic bags and they're not necessarily being as thorough about the produce that you would normally buy, right? So I think if you can communicate them, they have like that chat feature, that's where you're going to be able to kind of ask it for exactly what you want if you have specific requests.
Yeah, well played. Well played. And I would imagine you're absolutely right with those little plastic produce bags. They are kind of a big time waste. I want to go back to, and we're going to get to the food here in just a second. Bear with me a little bit more. But just, we talked about the cost savings in terms of the wallet. But, you know, what about if somebody were to adopt the scrappy way of cooking? You know, how much percentage wise do you think they'd be cutting down on their carbon footprint? Things like these little black bags go a long way too.
Yeah. I don't know if I can equate it to an actual percentage, but first off the hop, there was a study done that showed eating plant-based is one of the single biggest ways people can reduce their environmental footprint. And that is, of course, because animal agriculture, like raising a cow for like such a small piece of beef, is just such a drain on resources. And waste works in a similar way. It's a drain on resources to produce the food. And then if you're wasting it and it's then decomposing in landfills and emitting methane gas, it's not a great thing. So if you're going to pair plant-based eating with reducing your food waste, I think that is the ultimate way out of anything else that you're doing that you can really be kinder to the environment. And again, you don't have to be perfect, but there's other ways that you can kind of go about this. Like I said, there's some unavoidable food waste. I am not a proponent of eating moldy food. I think once it's gotten to that point, it's time to say goodbye. But if you can compost, that's incredible. And I'm really lucky. I live in a city where we have a green bin program. So the city comes and picks up a green bin every week where you can compost, and then they'll compost it for you. Often in places like New York City, they'll have compost drop-off areas. So reducing your waste, composting if you can, eating plant-based, in my opinion, just the most winning combination for reducing your individual environmental impact.
Right. That's a good qualifier. I'm not a fan of eating moldy food either, so that's good. I'm glad that we're on the same page. That's probably why you and I get along so well. So I love in this book, there's a little segment or a section like right up toward the top of the book where it's got this, make that. And I was like, wow, this is absolutely brilliant. And it has a lot of foods in there that we struggle with, and 9 times out of 10 would absolutely wind up in the garbage. Chief of which, at least in this household, is wilted greens. But you can do some magical things with those greens that you're getting ready to toss.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite areas in the book. It's the have this, make that index. And it has like a picture of bread or wilting greens and all the recipes you can use them up. But wilting greens is one of the biggest offenders. And I think it's because we all head to the grocery store, we buy that box of spinach, it ends up in the back of the fridge. Then at the end of the week, it's staring at us and it's like, eat me before I go bad. So one of the number one things I say to people is your freezer is your best friend. You can literally take that box or bag of spinach and pop it in the freezer, use it for smoothies. But one thing you could take it one step further is blend it up with a little coconut water and chia seeds, put it into an ice cube tray, and now you have smoothie cubes that you can pop in the blender to make like thick, creamy smoothies. I love to use greens in beautiful curries, so you can just add a whole handful, or you can make a beautiful like vegan paneer curry. So I have a recipe for that in my book, but those are my top tips. And I always say, people, don't be afraid of frozen vegetables and fruits. Oftentimes people think that buying frozen berries versus fresh might not be as healthy. But if you live somewhere like Canada, like me, where most of the fresh produce is coming from really far on trucks, on planes, on ships. The frozen produce, your berries and your vegetables, are harvested and then frozen right away. So oftentimes they'll maintain more nutrients in the fresh stuff that you're buying, unless you're getting it from like a farmer's market. So I think one way really easy to reduce your waste is instead of buying that fresh, you can just buy your frozen berries. If you're somebody who eats smoothies or bakes with berries, or if you're somebody who just uses like spinach in smoothies.
All right. I'm going to talk to you more about berries in a second, but I got to stick with the greens and ask the question, like, how far gone is too far gone for the greens? Like, how wilted is too wilted? When should we just say, golly, I really wish I could do something with this, but it's just probably not a good idea right now.
Yeah. So this goes back to kind of our spoilage conversation. And really, as soon as you see a scent or you smell a scent, or you see signs of mold, it's time for it to go. And I don't mean like they've gone like a little bit wilted. There might be one leaf that's a little bit off that you can take out and safely remove. If there is any scent, it's time to move on. But the goal here is not to get to that point, right? And I had a funny conversation. I was talking to a doctor the other day on a podcast, and he was saying, are you the type of person who just like removes the mold from your bread and then eats the rest of the slice? And I was like, oh yeah. And he's like, don't do that, because the mold spores, it's actually been proven, have already gone through the entire bread. So not a proponent of eating spoiled food. Use your senses, your eyes, your smell, and you'll know if something is spoiled. But a little bit wilting and you're okay.
All right, that's good to know. But I think that there are still some people who are like, yeah, well, I'll pick off most of the mold, the ones that I can see, the mold that's not microscopic, and the rest of it, we'll just call it free penicillin. I mean, there are people that are just gung-ho for like all of that. And I think at some point, yeah, you know, common sense definitely does have to kick in. But it's interesting you're talking about bread, because in this Have This, Make That section, you say the number one wasted food is, in fact, stale bread, and you've come up with a bunch of different recipes for that. Before coming up with the idea of scrappy cooking, how much bread were you throwing away?
I think the problem with bread, and we have found this in the past, is we'll go to like a sourdough bakery and we love fresh sourdough bread, but then you get it home and within a couple of days it's gone kind of hard. So that's the problem with bread, right? Is it just kind of becomes less edible very quickly. And it's, again, it's not necessarily moldy, but it's too hard to kind of eat a piece with your dinner. So what I love to do with it, first of all, you can make breadcrumbs. This is the easiest one. You blend them up with some dried parsley, maybe a little nutritional yeast, oregano, pop them in the oven, and you have beautiful breadcrumbs that you can use to bread tofu, put on pastas, soups, whichever else. The other thing I love to do, which I have in our breakfast chapter, is called a last week's loaf breakfast casserole, and it's really a spin on a French toast, and it uses this beautiful coconut vegan yogurt custard, and you tear up the stale bread, put it in a casserole dish, pour this beautiful custard over top, pop it in the oven, bake it. It rehydrates the bread into this beautiful breakfast recipe that has found new life. And then the final one that comes to mind is, of course, croutons. I'm a big fan of croutons in a salad. So same sort of thing. You just chop them up, maybe spritz with some vegetable broth, pop them in the oven, and you have the best croutons, homemade croutons of your life. And I even have an amazing panzanella salad, which is like a rock hard stale bread salad in the book that is beyond delicious.
Is there any way to reconstitute stale bread? Can you steam it, add a little moisture back to it, and go back to town with sandwiches and such?
I'm so glad you asked. So one thing you can do with stale bread, if you've got like a nice baguette that has gone hard, is you can actually run it underwater and then pop it back in the oven to dry out. So you run it underwater really quickly, not so like it's completely soaked, but just like a little bit of wet, and then kind of steam it in the oven. And what it will do is rehydrate that bread back to new. But then you want to eat it immediately after you do that, or it will go back to its original hard state.
Okay. So are we talking, do we want to wrap it in foil as well to kind of like capture that moisture and not let it steam out and dry out? And are we doing low heat, high heat here? What would you recommend?
I put it in the oven at 400 degrees and I don't wrap it, but I'm sure you probably could. That might be the better strategy there. And then I just let it bake, let that water kind of evaporate. It will kind of steam in the oven anyways because it's already wet. And then you can check it at 10, 20 minutes and pull it out, and it will be nice and soft.
Let's go back to berries here. I'm so fascinated by this. So we were talking about frozen berries, and then we got to talking about wilted greens. And now I'm wondering, well, what about those berries that are just about to turn? Maybe they're getting a little bit of soft in certain spots. So one of the things that you have here in this section is mushy berries. So if your berries are getting a little bit mushy, what are some ideas that we can really turn to make sure that we're not just tossing them aside?
Yeah, this has been a big problem in my household, because my favorite fruit in the world is raspberries. But I find as soon as you get raspberries home, they can really start to go mushy very quickly. And then you don't want to necessarily eat them on your oatmeal. So one thing that you can do, which is a fan favorite of Plant U, is make fruit leather. So this is really fun. You just blend them up again with little chia seeds, and it becomes smooth, and then pour it onto a sheet pan and dehydrate in the oven. You can also do this in the sun if you live in a place where there's not a lot of bugs around. Dehydrate, if you have a dehydrator, great. If not, you can do it in the lowest setting on your oven for a few hours, and it will become like a fruit roll-up. So good, naturally sweetened, great for kids. You can also make jam. So again, berries in a pot, a little bit of chia seeds, a little bit of maple syrup. If you like things sweeter, mash them up and you've got a beautiful jam. And then the third thing I love to do is make a crisp. So I have like an any fruit crisp in the dessert chapter of my book. Again, this is one of those recipes where you can kind of like interchange things based on what you have on hand. It will work with peaches or something like berries. And you just put your fruit in a nice oven-safe dish, add a beautiful crumble on there with oats and oat flour, a little maple syrup, and it becomes a beautiful dessert.
I love the fact that you're talking about desserts because that appeals to a very wide audience. And you know, people with the sweet tooth just love something sweet. And the fruit leather just reminds me so much of the fruit roll-ups that we would get as a kid, only yours, much healthier. Obviously, none of the high fructose corn syrup, added preservatives, anything like that. Your fruit leather tastes 10 times better with about 10 times fewer ingredients.
Exactly. And all of the recipes in the book, I think people were concerned when I was coming out with sort of a higher concept cookbook, but the recipes really mirror my first. They're all whole food, plant-based. Almost all of them are oil-free or at least oil-free optional, barring one recipe where I use puff pastry, which I need to ask Chef AJ if there's a way to make puff pastry without oil, but I'm not sure. And they're all ingredients you can get from the grocery store. So you're not going to see my book calling for vegan cheese or vegan meats or Beyond Meat. They're all whole food plant-based ingredients, which is really important to me, not only from a health perspective, but an accessibility, because typically whole foods are going to be a lot more affordable.
You just said higher concept cookbook. That doesn't necessarily mean that the recipes themselves are more difficult and the average person can't attempt them in the kitchen, right?
Yeah. And I only say higher concept because I've been asked a lot lately, like, I didn't know if the zero waste thing was for me. And I'm like, it's for everybody. Scrappy cooking is for everybody. So it's not even higher concept. And the recipes are so easy. They really mirror the simplicity of my first book in that they use few ingredients, all whole food, plant-based, all usually pretty quick. And of course, in my opinion, delicious.
All right, let's talk about a really surprising one. And this recipe seems to have really taken off on your Instagram, on your TikTok. I saw you make this on Sherry Shepherd, for goodness sakes. The coffee grounds, what you were able to do with the coffee grounds and turn that into a delicious granola, that is some straight Harry Potter magician Houdini in the kitchen type of like amazingness, Carly.
Thank you. This is a really popular recipe. Like, I have made it now a few different times. I made it on the Sherry Show, and then I made it for a magazine I was filming for, and people love it. So you just take your spent coffee grounds if you're a coffee drinker, and it's not a huge amount. It's a quarter cup, so it's not overwhelming coffee flavor. You mix it with oats, you mix it with brewed coffee, some maple syrup, tahini, and you bake it up in cocoa powder, and it becomes this mocha, beautiful granola. We love to sprinkle it on our vegan yogurt in the morning, even on cereal. It is, you can throw it in a jar for a snack. It's beyond delicious, especially if you're a coffee lover. And if you're not, you can just use tea leaves and tea instead.
Ooh, I would imagine that flavor would be a little bit different. I would have to go with like a green tea there. I think that would have a good flavor. I think black might be a little bit too tart. I don't know. I mean,
even
have
Earl
you tried
Grey.
It with
even, so we tried with Earl Grey, but again, it just all depends on, are you a tea lover? I'm a huge coffee person. Do you drink coffee?
I'm a big fan of the Joe.
Meeting people who don't drink coffee, and I'm like, they're coming out of the woodwork here. I didn't know they existed, but there is a lot of people who don't drink coffee. So yeah, I made sure to include substitutions for that in the book.
So I love coffee, and I absolutely love tea. I think Earl Grey, is that a little bit tricky? Because a lot of times there's like a little bit of an added oil to the Earl Grey that kind of gives it that bite a little bit, if I'm not mistaken. Does that complicate the recipe at all?
Not really. So I have a great Earl Grey cake recipe in the book as well, which uses the tea leaves from your Earl Grey tea from the bag into your icing. It is really good. Like, if you are somebody who likes the flavor of Earl Grey, I find it comes through beautifully in a cooking world. So I think that the granola could be really good with Earl Grey.
That is very, very, very bold, genius. I don't know, daring of you. I'm going to try it. Like, what the heck, you know? It sounds fun to say anyway. Earl Grey granola.
Yeah. It's like a London Fog granola.
Yo.
There you go. That could be a whole new thing. I don't know if I'd put the cocoa powder if I was doing the Earl Grey, though.
No. Maybe cinnamon? Kind of, I don't know. You'd have to
cinnamon.
Go.
Yeah. 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 I'm going to try this now. We tried it with orange pico and it did go with the chocolate, but I think if I was going to do it again, I would try Earl Grey, take out the cocoa powder, sprinkle a cinnamon like you said.
Yeah.
It could be good because it has brewed coffee in the recipes, so I would do brewed tea.
Yeah. Well played.
Are we on to something here?
I think we might be. That might be our first collaboration. That's what we're doing. That's what's happening right now. That. All right, cool. I think the exam roomies are ready for it. That's awesome. What else can you do with coffee grounds? I mean, we've seen this recipe really go around everywhere, but I'm curious, like, there's got to be more than you can do with your coffee grounds than just granola.
Yeah, so if you're not eating them, one thing people love to do, and I do all the time actually, is put them in a bowl open in your fridge. And if you ever are someone who has put baking soda, like an open package of baking soda in your fridge, it's the same thing. It's a natural deodorizer. So it will suck up like scents of onion and whichever else. You don't want to eat it after this, but fun way to use it. And then third is people will use it as plant fertilizer. So people seem to think because I'm this scrappy cook that I am good at growing plants. But I am not at all. So use this tip with caution, but there are some plants who really love coffee grounds as fertilizer, so I've heard. And you can also use banana peels as well. So what you'll do is chop up banana peels, put them in water, let them soak overnight, because banana peels have a lot of potassium and some phosphorus, which is in fertilizer, and then you can spray it on your plants.
Yeah, and what I love about you, one of the many things I love about you, is true to the zero waste concept here. There really is no coffee left behind because now we've got the grounds taken care of. But how often do you make a pot of coffee and there's just that one cup at the bottom of the pot that just doesn't get drunk for whatever reason?
Exactly.
You've got stuff for that too.
Yeah, coffee can go into so many things. So again, we've got it in our granola, but I've also got it in desserts. So you can use coffee in place of milk in cookies. So I believe I have coffee in my hot chocolate cookies, one of the two cookie recipes. So really, if you're ever making a dessert recipe where it calls for like vegan milk or water, you can often just replace that with coffee if you're a coffee lover. And the cool thing about coffee is it pairs really well with chocolate. So when you try this coffee ground granola recipe, it's actually called common ground granola, you'll find that the coffee flavor is not overwhelming, but you're going to get a beautiful chocolate flavor because it brings out those chocolate notes, which is, I'm a huge chocolate lover. So it's a 10 out of 10 for me.
You're not the only one. So I know that it's in the scrappy cookie recipe that's in the book. But what caught me off guard was we're not just talking about desserts here. You found a way to do coffee-infused chili, if I'm not mistaken, the Cup of Joe chili. This was blowing my mind.
So this is funny, Chuck. My mom always put coffee in chili. So it didn't even come to mind because I thought it was something that people do. Guess my mom, the book's dedicated to my mom. It says she's the original scrappy cook, but she really was. So when I was making chili, as I went plant-based, I would always put coffee in it because it just intensifies. Again, it doesn't taste like coffee, but it intensifies the other flavor of like the chili, and it gives the chili a beautiful color. So yes, I completely forgot about that recipe, Cup of Joe chili, and it is unreal. I love that recipe.
Doesn't matter if you're using light roast, dark roast, medium roast. What's the go-to here?
Depends on your preference, right? I love coffee, so we're typically using dark roast, but it really is not going to matter. It's in replacement of what would be water in the recipe. So again, it's kind of like utilizing a flavor enhancer where it would normally just be liquid.
Yeah. And the book is absolutely dedicated to your mom, which was so endearing. When you and I were talking earlier this year, that was one of the things that jumped out at me when I first saw the galley. I was like, oh, that's so sweet. And for those who aren't, you know, really familiar yet, is the fact that you recently lost your mom. And in the midst of that, you're still out there talking about the book. And I think that this is a really cool opportunity also to tell people a little bit about your mom too, because as you said, she was the original scrappy cook. I mean, and if she was putting coffee and chili and you remember that being just a little girl, I would imagine there are some other recipes that she may have inspired in this book as well.
Yeah, I can't talk about this yet without crying. So it was...
Oh, I don't mean to make you cry. That was not the goal there.
No, I appreciate it. I think anytime I get to talk about my mom is such a great opportunity. So my mom passed 3 weeks ago, and not good timing, obviously, with the launch of this book, but the book happened to be dedicated to her, which she got to see before it launched, which I'm so grateful for. A lot of the recipes in the book are inspired by my mom. I mean, her and I were so close. I grew up with her home cooking, which was not vegan. But one of the first things I talk about this a lot is before she even got cancer and passed and whichever else, was that one of the first recipes I ever veganized was a bolognese pasta, which I can still smell when I think about going into my parents' home after school. I'm a huge pasta lover, but at the time it was with ground beef. And that was one of the first things I veganized. And I took it one step further for this book in this Sunday sauce recipe, because it's really just a killer bolognese recipe. But I think when you go plant-based, one of the most difficult parts that people don't talk about is you feel like you have to give up a lot of these nostalgic foods that you grew up eating or that are attached to your family or that are really important to you. And I would challenge that and say, oftentimes you can build on them and make them plant-based. So like, we've got tacos in the book, we've got beautiful jackfruit stew that's like inspired by a beef stew. We've got an amazing bolognese pasta, Sunday sauce recipe. So like, a lot of the recipes in the book are things we have regularly and are inspired by my childhood.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's so cool. And, you know, I had the fortune, a good fortune of meeting your mom in Toronto last year. And I still to this day, Carly, and probably for the rest of my life, will feel bad about big timing you guys as I was leaving the hotel and you guys were pulling in. And it was like your car was just covered in rain. And I see some like two random women just like waving at me. And I like, my glasses were all fogged. I couldn't make out who they were. I was like, and then I just like drove off in my Uber. And I felt so bad when I figured out it was you and your mom. And I am so sorry. And I hope she didn't take offense to that.
Oh my goodness. No, that was hilarious. But yeah, it's hard because my mom loved coming to those events with me. So it's just weird now, right? Like, anyways.
Yeah.
Enough. But it's bittersweet right now because there's so much to celebrate. And yeah, the book being kind of in her legacy is a special thing, but difficult to talk about for sure.
Well, let's flip the page here. Let's see if I can make you laugh and dry up those tears a little bit. I think that really a good sign that you're onto something with the recipe, when you know it's really good, is when you can get somebody to go back for seconds. And that is exactly what happened when you were on with Sherry Shepherd on her show recently, big time national TV. And she went back for seconds of the broccoli stem fries. I was shocked by that. You go through the whole segment, and she circles back to the fries. I was like, that's how you know it's a good recipe. What did she say to you when the camera stopped rolling?
She said, oh my gosh, those are good. They taste just like asparagus. And it's funny, broccoli stems are this one I love to talk about because I think so many of us in the whole food plant-based world are buying broccoli every week. And oftentimes we're paying for it by weight. So when you're throwing away the stems, which are heavy, you're literally throwing money down the drain. And then also nutrition, they're very nutritious and delicious. So to make broccoli stem fries, you can just peel the stems, chop them up into fries, bread in some breadcrumbs, nutritional yeast, pop them in the oven and you've got a delicious crispy snack. But one thing I love to do with them is cut them into matchsticks and then put them into summer rolls. This is my favorite. I'm going to make a video on it soon. And they really just have this fresh, delicious flavor. But it was really funny. I was scared when she first tried them because she got like a tough piece and then she was like throwing them in her mouth. She was just so lovely.
I know. I was worried too, but like she circled back. I was like, oh, be damn. The broccoli stem fries of all things. She liked the fruit leather too. She thought that was pretty cool too, but she really liked the jam in a jar where you made strawberry milk. I thought that this was just like, one, the simplest idea I'd ever seen, but two, the most genius at the same time. Tell us about the bottom of the jar recipes.
Yeah, so this is this concept where if you're getting to the end of a jar and you would typically discard it, use it all up, use every scrap of it. So I love this for strawberry jam jars. So you'll just add plant-based milk, give it a really good shake, pour it in a glass, and you'll have gorgeous homemade strawberry milk. The other one I love to do is with an almost empty peanut butter jar, add some soy sauce, rice vinegar, a little bit of ginger, lime juice, and some water, shake it up, and you've got peanut sauce. And the last one is almost empty mustard jar. So you're going to add, again, a little bit of apple cider vinegar, some oregano, maybe some dill, give it a good shake, and you've got a quick homemade mess-free salad dressing, and you've used the last scraps of those jars.
And let me tell you something, I love Asian-inspired cooking, and that peanut sauce thing, again, is just brilliant in both flavor and simplicity. And that is something that is impossible to mess up. Like you don't even need to know how to use a measuring cup, for goodness sakes. Just put it in a jar, shake it up.
No fuss, no mess. And you're using really every last bit. And I have a peanut butter jar latte recipe in the book as well, where it's the same concept. You add like a little bit of coffee, again, big coffee lover, or tea, and plant-based milk, a little bit of maple syrup, shake it up. And you've got like a delicious latte recipe.
Peanut butter latte. Carly Bodrug. For the win. I like where your head's at. I like where your head's at. And I love what this book stands for. Again, over 140 plant-based zero-waste recipes that are good for you, your wallet, and the planet. The book, Scrappy Cooking, right there. Hey, look, you got your own copy too. And matchy-matchy, if you notice.
Yeah, I'm wearing the outfit I wore on the cover.
Yeah, I love it. Was that by design or is that just happy coincidence this morning?
No, I'm trying to be in a green era. Like, I'm like, might as well wear it. So.
It works well. It's a cute outfit. I like it. The book by itself, one, I love the color green anyway, but like it just pops off of the pages here. There's so much color in this book. The food, the fonts, just everything is so good. Dill pickle chips. I just stumbled on this one. This one's going to get made for my cousin Woody. Yeah. So good. Man, you are a mad scientist in the kitchen. I love it so much. Congratulations on the new book and all of the success. I can't wait to see what's still to come. And, you know, my goodness, I'm so proud of you and how you continue to grow professionally, personally. You are an inspiration, my friend.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Chuck. And thank you for having me on. I appreciate it more than you know.
Of course. And I'm looking forward to catching up with you in Seattle at the Planted Expo. We just did the big one in Toronto, but we've got Seattle and Vancouver coming up. But Seattle, April 20th and 21st, you can pick up your tickets at plantedlife.com. Those are like top-notch events. And I'm not saying that just for the sake of saying that.
Yeah, if you guys have never been to a Planted Expo, there's one coming up in Seattle and then Vancouver. And it's just all of these incredible plant-based vendors, restaurants, they all have samples for you to eat and take home. And then there's great speakers like me and Chuck. So come and join us. It's a plant-based party.
We're going to have a grand old time, my friends. And then, by the way, Seattle area, stick around because Dr. Barnard's going to be speaking there on April 22nd at the Seattle Public Library, right downtown at the Central Branch. So make a long weekend of it. That'd be cool. Unreal. If you want to stick around, I'll get you tickets. Yeah.
Unreal, yeah.
All right. Good deals. Carly Bodrug, Scrappy Cooking. There's a link to pick up your copy in the show description, the episode notes, or head down to your local book retailer. Thanks, Carly. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Chuck. Have a great day.
Yes, indeed. A number one seller on Amazon already. So what are you waiting for, my friend? Get your copy of Scrappy Cooking today using the link that is down below in the episode notes. And might I suggest just a couple of my favorite recipes, or three or four? The buffalo chickpea lettuce wraps are a great place to start. If you're kind of into the bowl thing, go with the microbiome bowl. And then the firecracker tofu with coconut rice. Get on board that train, choo-choo to Flavor Town. So let's all belly up to the table because I am getting hungry. I'm definitely getting hungry. But oh, can't forget about dessert either. The PB&J chickpea blondies, let's go. All aboard. We're going to flavor country, my friends. And there is no doubt about it. Carly is so darn creative in the kitchen. So darn creative. And we're going to be working on that Earl Grey collab too. We got to get cracking on that. And so maybe Carly and I will have some time to iron out those details when we're together in Seattle for the Planted Expo on April 20th and 21st. That will be at the Seattle Convention Center. And she and I, we're not going to be the only ones there. Check this out. Dr. Michael Greger will be back for the Planted Expo, as will Robert Cheek, Ella Majors, Doug McNish, Desiree Nelson, Nimai Delgado, and many, many others, including our good friends, the Doc and Chef, Dr. Jim Loomis and Karen Dugan, along with thousands, and I do mean thousands, of Plant Forward fans and exam roomies as well. So you got to be there and join us for a grand old time, April 20th and 21st. Exam roomies, by the way, super generous offer right now from the Planted crew. You can save 15% on tickets by using the code EXAMROOM at checkout. That's one word, EXAMROOM, for 15% off single day and weekend passes. Just visit plantedlife.com to secure yours right now or click the link in the episode notes. And then stick around. On April 22nd, you can make it a long weekend of health because Dr. Neil Barnard will be rolling the Power Foods Lecture Series into Seattle at the Seattle Public Branch's Central Library. That's going to be a 7 o'clock start time. So get your tickets today, pcrm.org/events, to lock yours in there. And then in May, I'm going to be headed up to Rochester, Minnesota for the Lifestyle Medicine Pathway to Health and Happiness Symposium. That's a fun event. That's a great event presented by the Lotus Health Foundation. And tickets and a full list of speakers are available right now at lotushealthfoundation.org. That's lotushealthfoundation.org, or click the link in the episode notes. And while you're clicking around, don't forget to stop by Apple Podcast or Spotify, wherever it is that you get your shows, and leave a 5-star rating and a nice review for the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. And that is a great opportunity for you to not just let us know, but let the world know that you're thriving on a plant-based diet. Continue to raise your health IQs and inspire others around the world. That's the cool part about this. And for today, that is going to wrap things up. I want to say thank you one more time to the queen of scrappy cooking. No scrap left behind in the kitchen today. Carly Bodrug, thank you so very much for being here and helping us raise our health IQs. And for everyone at the Physicians Committee, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll. Thank you so very much for listening. And remember, as always, keep it plant-based.